The SpaceX IPO story has three distinct threads this week, and they paint a complicated picture of what might be the largest IPO in history by market cap. The headline-grabbing thread is the 4,400-plus SpaceX employees who became millionaires. That's a genuine wealth creation story for engineers and operators who built something real over more than two decades. The contrast with Blue Origin is stark and worth dwelling on. Former Blue Origin employees are publicly saying their equity options expired without paying out. Over thousands of people and billions of dollars in Jeff Bezos' personal investment, the exit event that was supposed to create employee wealth simply didn't materialize in the same way.
The second SpaceX thread is the bond market story, and this one is sobering for anyone who interpreted the IPO euphoria as an unqualified positive. The $25 billion bond sale, one of the largest corporate bond issuances in recent memory, is already sitting on roughly $305 million in paper losses. Alliance's chief investment officer is using the phrase bubble territory. Paper losses on a bond sale this size this quickly suggest the initial pricing was too aggressive relative to what the secondary market was willing to support. Bondholders got less protection than they paid for, essentially.
The third thread is the halo effect on the broader space sector, and it's going in the wrong direction for everyone except SpaceX. At least four publicly traded space companies have dropped more than 50% in June alone. The mechanism here is pretty straightforward. SpaceX's IPO gave investors a direct, liquid way to own the premier space franchise. Compared to owning a profitable, proven rocket company, owning speculative space ventures with uncertain revenue models looks considerably less attractive. Capital rotated towards SpaceX and out of the alternatives. This is a winner-take-most dynamic in a sector that had previously benefited from investors' inability to access SpaceX directly.
The Apple chip lobbying story is a significant intersection of corporate strategy, trade policy, and geopolitics. Apple is lobbying the Trump administration for permission to purchase chips from a blacklisted Chinese firm. The specific firm hasn't been named in the reporting I've seen, but the context suggests it's a supplier that Apple has deep supply chain relationships with that became subject to export controls. Apple's position is essentially, the blacklist creates a supply chain disruption that hurts American consumers and Apple's competitiveness. The administration's position involves weighing that against national security concerns about semiconductor technology transfer to Chinese firms.
This is where antitrust law and trade law intersect in interesting ways, and it's a good moment to do a quick curriculum corner on how some of this regulatory machinery actually works. When we talk about the FTC clearing Musk to acquire Mesh Optical Technologies, the optical data center startup, people often assume that antitrust review is simply about market share. That's actually not how it works legally. The Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 makes it illegal to monopolize or attempt to monopolize any part of commerce. But the Supreme Court has consistently held that having a large market share isn't itself illegal. What matters is whether that market share was achieved or maintained through anti-competitive conduct, predatory pricing, exclusionary contracts, or acquisitions specifically designed to eliminate potential competitors before they can challenge the dominant firm. In the Mesh case, the FTC would have asked, does Musk acquiring this optical transceiver company give his AI data center ventures an unfair advantage that forecloses competition, or is this just a vertical integration play where a customer buys a supplier? The FTC cleared it, which suggests they concluded the latter. For Apple's chip lobbying, the relevant framework isn't antitrust at all, it's the Export Administration Regulations and the Entity List, which are executive branch trade tools, not judicial processes. The standards are entirely different.
The Broadcom-Google-MediaTek triangle is a classic example of what happens when a dominant supplier gets too comfortable. Broadcom has been Google's primary partner for custom AI accelerator chips, the tensor processing units that power Google's AI workloads. If Google shifts even a portion of that work to MediaTek, a Taiwanese chipmaker known primarily for mobile processors, it sends a signal to every custom silicon vendor. Customer diversification isn't just a supply chain preference, it's a negotiating weapon. Broadcom shares sliding on this report reflects the market's recognition that a significant portion of Broadcom's revenue growth thesis rested on AI chip demand that may now face competition for Google's allocation.
The Tata breach expanding to TSMC and Qualcomm files is a story with serious implications for the entire semiconductor supply chain. Tata Electronics is one of Apple's primary assembly contractors. If the breach includes TSMC chip specifications and Qualcomm design documents, the scope of exposed intellectual property extends far beyond Apple's product roadmaps. TSMC's manufacturing processes are among the most closely guarded industrial secrets in the world. The gap between TSMC's leading-edge process nodes and everyone else's is the fundamental source of Taiwan's strategic value in the global semiconductor ecosystem. Leaked process documentation, even partial documentation, is exactly what China's domestic chip industry would find most valuable.